forgot the secret of steel and left it on the battlefield. And we who found it are just men.
Good morning, everybody. We are on another episode of Iron Radio, and my son keeps trying to call me, so I'm sorry about that. This is Phil Stevens. I am a strength coach, powerlifter, Highland Games athlete, and podcaster.
Nice. Is Dr. Mike Tudelson, still home in Minnesota briefly, and associate professor of the Kerrigan Institute for the Flex Diet Cert and the Phys Flex Cert. The Phys Flex Cert is open Monday, October 13th. The following Monday, October 20th. So if you're interested in how to become more resilient, recover faster, more anti-fragile, just generally harder to kill, check it out. Just go to the website, hop on the newsletter.
That's just 2 days away.
Right? Yep.
Wow. Okay. And this is Lonnie Lowry, lifelong bodybuilder. It feels like lifelong podcaster. It's been a really long time. Exercise physiology and nutrition dietetics professor of a couple of decades. I just retired my dietetics license. I think I might have mentioned that. But so now just writing and consulting and, you know, trying to lift when I don't hurt myself.
And yeah. Recently a year older.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You know, birthday. I won't use the person's name. I bet he's listening. I got a really nice private message, and I never look at private messages. It was just a random. I happened to click on it. Something really nice about just how selfless we are for doing this without a commercial interest, you know, and it was just really, really cool about how it affected his life and stuff. And sometimes I forget that, right?
We may have
a small lingering customer base or a listener base rather, but yeah, it makes you feel like you matter. So I appreciate you, bro. I know who you are. I have one little piece of news, and then Phil got a interesting piece of listener mail that we can riff on for sure. Let me start with this because it's going to be briefer.
Strength and muscle sport news.
This is a topic that came up specifically. Mike and I were talking about it. I think all three of us were talking about it, about NAD boosters. So this is spanking new. I mean, literally issued September 29th. It's Rick Polito. This is from the Nutrition Business Journal. And Mike's probably familiar. You know, this is all the stuff that circulates around like Supply Side East and Supply Side West or Supply Side Global or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's so many. But it says FDA's decision on NMN elicits varied responses from supplement associations, highlighting ongoing issues with drug preclusion policy. And I'll get to that. And ingredient regulation. So it says at a glance. And here, let me take off my glasses because I don't have my bifocals. In a reversal. So a reversal, FDA acknowledged NMN was on the market before drug studies, opening the door for continued supplement sales. I didn't realize it was about to be made a drug. So I guess
long about a year and a half ago or so. Yeah.
Yeah. And this something similar happened with NAC, as it turns out. So
yep.
If you love these things, maybe you go buy them. I know this sounds kind of funny because we were just saying, oh, well, it was on our mistakes list, you know, it was too expensive. We didn't get enough out of it. But let me offer just a few details, and I'm not going to read this whole piece. I'd suggest anybody go check out this piece by Rick Polito. Again, Nutrition Business Journal. You can find it on the Supply Side Supplement Journal. You know, Google these things. It says, likely patent disputes and ongoing challenges from drug companies mean the NMN debate is far from settled. Responding on Monday to a lawsuit from the Natural Products Association, the NPA, and citizen petitions from the Council for Responsible Nutrition. And again, Mike and I are familiar with these guys ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
FDA announced that nicotinamide mononucleotide, or NMN, was on the market prior to it being studied as an investigational new drug. So again, the drug companies aren't real happy about this one. But by and large, we're going to see here that FDA usually sides with Big Pharma. Surprise, surprise. It says the agency has previously declared NMN sales unlawful under the language of the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, DSHEA, right, early 90s, which bars supplement companies from selling ingredients that have been investigated as drugs. So that's what we were talking about, like this preclusion. If it's under study as a drug, you don't get to go sell it as a supplement pill. However, at least for now, it looks like it's okay. Now, this brought to mind two things with me: CDB choline, right? Citicoline and NAC, because both of those are kind of, well, they're either in the U.S. or somewhere else, also sold as drugs. So I was wondering about that. I'm like, what about these other things? And this does answer that. Anyway, it says NMN is one of the several precursors that drive cells to produce nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, or NAD, a coenzyme vital to cell energy metabolism. The Natural Products Association called the FDA's decision a victory and highlighted its role in prompting FDA's decision, and also taking credit for the FDA allowing sales of NAC back in 2022. So again, I wasn't even aware of that. I used to blow off NAC, you know, well, it's an antioxidant grade. I take other antioxidants, but no, it's different. Suffice it to say, I've been looking at this more lately, and Mike, you probably already knew this, but yeah, this is different. Definite clinical application for stuff like ruminating thoughts, you know, it does a lot of stuff. In fact, Psychology Today has written multiple articles on why it might be a fundamental, like, pillar of mental health. This very strong antioxidant, right? N-acetylcysteine, and how it might reduce brain inflammation, and how that might have all kinds of benefits. So, anyway, so they're pushing back. So, thank goodness, I think, for CRN in some of these places. It says CRN hailed it as good news, but pointed to FDA's failure to provide clarity on how the agency intends to handle drug preclusion cases. In a press release, the council decried the agency's unwillingness to get to offer clear guidance and rulemaking on the matter. So I'm not going to keep going on about it, except to say late stage capitalism. You know, there's even some of my favorite songs. There's even lyrics about how the FDA has been bought by big banks and big pharma. I want to have some confidence in FDA, right? But I also know that if something's really effective, we've all seen it. Like, it'll either be banned or it'll be made a drug. There's too much money to be made. So if you're really interested in NMN, even though, again, we kind of poo-pooed it recently, boy, there's a lot going on in the industry around that one. And again, I'll side note, thank goodness the NAC was allowed to, you know, undergo continued sale. I just bought a 250 capsule extra big bottle of it.
That the NAC when COVID happened, there was some preliminary data and I never followed up on it, so maybe it didn't pan out, but that NAC may have been beneficial for COVID, and that it seemed like the pharmaceutical companies went crazy and tried to then say, oh, this is a drug, and the FDA, I think in their early agreement, had agreed with them, and then everybody protested and they did reverse it, which is good. The NMN is, like, I think more interesting than, like, the Tru Niagen. Again, Tru Niagen, you know, shout out to ChromaDex. They do have a fair amount of actual trials in mostly pathologies, though. We were kind of talking about it for, you know, healthy people being an ergogenic, that type of thing. In other types of pathologies, there is some very interesting data. There's some early interesting data on M&M or NMN, but I would say it's even more preliminary, and as far as I know, a lot of the supplement companies, at least the handful that I knew that were looking at it pretty hardcore, once all the litigation started, they just dropped all their trials because they're just like, you know, why are we spending all this money on something that may become a drug and we're just going to lose our ass? So hopefully there'll be a lot more research now. Maybe it'll be useful. There is some other interesting approaches to kind of maybe prop up the other pathways by using multi-ingredient devices that may, in the end, increase NAD. I would say the jury is still out on that, but it's an interesting approach. So again, I still think there's something there as to what it is. I still think we're quite a ways away, but it is super interesting for sure.
Yeah, I mean, on a surface level, when I glance at something like this, like, NAC is, in my mind, just sort of a form of a cysteine, of a single
Yeah,
amino
exactly.
acid. You know, NMN is closely related to vitamin metabolism. I mean, so, Mike, you and I have gone, I think it was in Spain, we saw a conference where they were trying to tweak EPA or DHA, like fish oils, so they can sell them as a drug. And they're like, it wasn't working quite as well as just the natural shit. And I'm like, ha-ha, you know, but yeah, they're always at it. And yes, for NAC. That's why I got turned on to it. They were stacking it. I think I did a little, it might be on the nutrition radio, like little section of our YouTube channel, but I did a little piece on it. They were stacking it with a drug for brain fog, long COVID brain fog.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very interested in that because I was struggling with that big time. So yeah, stuff like fogginess and cognition and stuff, NAC may be important. The NMN, I kind of chalk it up to, yes, it's about aging, and yes, I'm always bitching about aging. We all are, but there's not enough there, in my opinion, for me to spend $100 a bottle. If it was $10 a bottle, you know, or real cheap, like NAC is very cheap, I might still use it, but it's too expensive.
Yeah, and the raws on NMN went pretty high for a while, and then they sort of came down, and then everybody got scared, and it just kind of disappeared. So even getting legitimate material became kind of difficult, and then I kind of stopped looking at it for a while.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I just saw that, and I'm like, well, we were just talking about NAD booster. So yeah, so it's safe for now, but if anybody's really into it, I don't know, you might want to go. I don't know. Is it illegal for me to say go stock up on it? Nah. People did that with pro hormones, man.
Exactly.
You know, or ephedra products.
Yeah, they did. Holy crap. He's got toilet paper.
Stockpile. One last thing, and before we do our listener mail, because we can quickly go to break, and then that's going to be a whole discussion. I just have in my hands, I just got it, The Link Between Coffee and Health. I co-wrote a chapter in this. I think it's chapter 28 on coffee and sports performance. But anyway, I worked with Stanislaw Surma, an MD from Poland, who was one of the editors. It's Springer Nature, so it's quality stuff. This is a really cool book. It's much nicer than I would have thought. So if anybody who's listening is a super nerd, it's Banach, B-A-N-A-C-H, and Surma editors, The Link Between Coffee and Health. It's Springer. There's so much stuff in here. I'm going to be reading this for ages, right? Because it's not like I'm privy to all the information in these other chapters. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of chapters. So I'm going to be digging around, maybe even getting the E version of this so I can scan it for trigonoline, because we just talk about NMN or NR or different NAD boosters. Trigonoline may be one of those and have impacts on muscle mass as you age. So I'm going to be scanning through the whole E version of this book, I think. Anyway, let's go to break just quickly. I know these are short episodes when we just shoot the shit together. And then we come back, Phil will read this stuff for us. And it's very linked to him and some high-level performance. So, hey, everybody. Iron Radio is back, and in an altered way. You may have noticed that the original iTunes feed stopped updating some time ago. This is partly due to a behind-the-scenes server issue, which is why we now broadcast through the Iron Radio Nutrition Radio Network. Please do a search within iTunes for that. Second, Mike Nelson is handling the weekly syndication of the show, which should expand its reach through different social media channels. The show will appear regularly through iTunes, Spotify, and most of your favorite podcasting sites. You may also want to check out the Iron Radio listener page on Facebook to see what's going on behind the scenes. Lastly, in addition to our YouTube archives, which goes back several years and is free, of course, Dr. Nelson is looking forward to putting together a new website that will give further information and allow those of you who have supported us in the past to make donations if you value the content. Iron Radio is one of the longest running, if not the longest running, strength training and sports nutrition podcast on the internet. We plan to continue to bring you the news, banter, and occasional guests that have made the Iron Radio listener base so loyal from the start. You are appreciated.
What's going on? It's Dr. Mike T. Nelson here, and wanted to let you know that I also have a free daily newsletter. So if you enjoy all the topics you hear on Iron Radio, from performance, how to add more muscle, body composition, you can get on to my free daily insider newsletter. Just go to www.ironradiodrmike.com. That's IronRadioDrmike.com. Thank you so much. See you there.
And one more thing. Everybody knows that I write book chapters and books, and one of them coming out this fall in 2025, and of course will be new throughout 2026, is Dietary Supplements in Sports Performance. The idea behind this book is just to have something that's trusted, a guide that you can hold in your hand that cuts through the noise, gives evidence-based answers on most common questions about dietary supplements relevant to sports. So for each supplement, you'll get what it is and how it works, common names and food sources, potential performance benefits, research studies and outcomes, practical applications for dosing, and drug interactions and safety concerns. In addition to that, of course, there's going to be some content in there about regulation and special pops and other things. All you have to do is Google Dr. Lonnie Lowry book, as Phil pointed out, and you should be able to get the link to Dietary Supplements and Sports Performance. Again, new book, physical book, so you don't have to dig around all over online and wonder if, you know, it's trusted information. And check it out. Thank you.
Okay, everybody, we are back. Yeah, and I got a, this is hot off the presses. I got texted this 14 minutes ago. So to give you a, like a brief window into what we're talking about here, it's basically a client of mine. I had trained this guy for many years. It's a son and dad, and I trained the son. They brought the son to me when he was like a freshman in high school, and I trained him all through high school and then all through college, and he's a PT now. But I trained his dad, which is who the topic's about, to, God, several events, but Highland Games, and then most notably the Firefighter Games. He went to the Firefighter World Games and did the well, they have a bunch of events there. They have bodybuilding, powerlifting, and all this stuff. I think I did it to powerlifting once, but then he did the one where you have to do a hands or a foot-free rope climb and all that crap, dragging ropes and things like that, and he won that probably 5-6 years ago. And then turned his sights more to bodybuilding, which is what he did before. And he recently earned his pro card. And he's more our age, so 50s.
Oh, wow.
He got his pro card and competed 2 weeks ago and took fourth in Daytona. And then I do believe he's competing this weekend in Vegas. The Olympia is going on, which we haven't even talked about at all. But I know a couple clients that are there. But anyways, so they sent a question this morning. Well, his son did. And he's wondering if I can ask the guys if they have any references to recommendations for glycogen depletion and reloading parameters or advice for dad to for him to research into. He feels that he was overfed for his last show and plans to make some adjustments for the shows coming up. And he wants to try some different glycogen loading things before the next contest, which he smartly wants to try them before he steps on stage doing them.
Yeah.
He wonders if you guys have any things that he can look into, read, things like that, so he can figure out what works best for him, either books, websites, articles, etc.
Interesting. You know what? Let me speak from experience, because I know Mike knows a lot about glycogen, you know, supercompensation, and I've looked into this a lot too. But in bodybuilding, I am most paranoid about overspill. You cannot follow the carb loading, glycogen supercompensation things that endurance guys do. They're pounding like 800 or 900 grams of carbs. You cannot do that.
Yeah.
And I would start as a baseline of about half that. So like 350, 400 grams, and see what happened. Because there's a cosmetic element to this that's really hard to study. Like, you're not going to find as many, you know, peer-reviewed journal articles on the cosmetic aspects. So you can look at old papers where they tried to literally use a tape measure and detect differences in girth, because it's clear that you fill out, right? Glycogen stores fill out.
Yeah.
And the tape measure stuff didn't register. It didn't really say. They're like, oh, it didn't do anything. I'm like, oh, you're using a fucking tape measure, you know, as opposed to like MRI scans or something. Cause we use some MRI stuff with creatine loading, and it was clear what that was doing. So I would suggest, if you're going to do a carb load, I would also do like a half strength, if you will, half dose creatine load with it. But again, don't be crazy in peak week. Yes, I like the idea of experimenting beforehand. And then you layer on different meds, like, you know, just performance enhancing drugs. And let's be honest, those are going to cause a lot of androgens, cause water retention, some way more than others. So you got to be real careful and experiment. And it is unknown territory, because, again, anybody is juggling different, especially at the pro level, let's be honest, different performance enhancing substances, we'll just say. And how that would interact with the creatine and carb loading. But as a rough bar, like start about half, because you cannot afford bloat. This is not about performance. It's about cosmetics. So you got to be real, real careful. That would be my my practical 2 cents before Mike, you know, interjects.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of literature, I think it was Dr. Guillermo was on a review for bodybuilding stuff, I think it was the last few months ago. I think there's been a couple that have talked about just best practices based on the literature. And yeah, similar to what Lonnie said, like you, endurance obviously is just all about performance. And even with the handful of endurance people I work with, for endurance athletes, I don't have them deplete beforehand. There's some debate about those early studies that were done in relation to that. In the endurance area, yes, you might eke out a little bit more glycogen, but if you look at the protocols they use to deplete people before a big race, I just find their stress is way too high. So, I mean, for physique athletes, which again, I only work with a handful. I had a natural athlete who qualified for her pro show. So she just did her pro show last weekend or the weekend before. And she did great. But similar to what you guys said, like, we had her do a practice run, probably like I have to look at my notes, about 3 weeks out, just to get an idea of, you know, how many carbs. And if you overspill at that point, it's not a big deal unless you go absolutely bonkers with it, and it's okay, right? And so you kind of feel a little bit more comfortable going, I'm gonna, you know, push the envelope a little bit, see what happens. And then leading up to the show, we generally have her do like a depletion, which is just 20-30 minutes of muscle contraction, 100 grams of carbs, you know, for 3, 4, 5 days, and then start her carbohydrate loading actually early. There's some data that I haven't seen published yet that I know Dr. Sean Art had talked about, that in female athletes, it may take longer to carb load than males. I haven't seen that published yet, so maybe it's still in the works. So typically, she's a female athlete, so even with guys, I typically do their carb load over 2 days. And then in her case, we had Friday was kind of a day we could make changes or tweaks, and then her show was Saturday. So again, there's a pro and con to everything, right? If you can nail everything 100%, like we probably would have carb loaded her 2 days before and she would be ready to go that Saturday morning. But because of the stress and because of the travel and you've got everything else going on, we opted to have, you know, Friday was just kind of a whole day. You know, if we needed to make changes, we could on that day. Yeah. And so again, there's all pros and cons, and then she's a natural athlete, so we don't have to worry about, you know, any of the PEDs, which will, like you said, drastically change a lot of stuff. And then the last thing is, the biggest thing I found is just, for God's sake, drink water, have enough carbs, be super lean going into it, and then just do the minimal shit possible. Like, just don't, I get so annoyed at like some of the consults I've done with people, and they've got a laundry list of like 18 things they're going to try peak week that they've never tested before. And I'm like, you may get lucky and hit it exactly, but even if you do, you can't replicate it. And more often than not, I've just seen it go completely sideways.
You know, Mike, and even if you've done it before, if there's too many variables, because again, there's even sodium, potassium,
and water,
the diuretics that would probably go with that, right? Yep. So like, if I were to carb deplete like just mildly Sunday and Monday, then like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I would do my half carb load with a little bit of creatine in there. Then Friday, again, like you said, monitor day. Why would you carb load right up to getting on stage?
Yeah.
You can do stuff on that Friday. But again, because of the PEDs, sodium, potassium, mostly just electrolytes and water, and then the diuretic kind of things that you might do on Friday, and the carb, there's too many balls in the air, even if you've done it before.
Yep.
You know, you don't know you're going to land exactly where you want. The more you screw around with, the more chance, you know, this Rube Goldberg machine, you know, Dave Tate just did an episode on Table Talk. I don't think it was about this, but he's like, peaking is for goons. You know, you don't, why would you even peak? Just be good all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
raise
there's
the floor.
There's something to be said for that here too, because especially bodybuilders do really stupid stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like Mike was saying in that last week, because your head is, I can just be 5% better. I can be 1% mm-hmm. better. No, bro.
Or you could screw it all up. And that's the thing that I get. As a coach, I was so paranoid. I hired another guy who I could text at any point to be like, if I get in an area where I'm not comfortable, because she did three shows in a short period of time because she qualified for a pro show, which is a good problem to have. I was super worried about, you know, stress and everything else. And you're not the same physiology. And yeah, I 100% agree with all that.
Well, how many times have we known someone who looked fantastic the day after the show?
Yeah.
They just stopped. And you're supposed to be better. The whole peak process is supposed to make you better. You know, I watched a guy, we've all heard stories like this, looked really good, thick, short, kind of a Franco Colombo build. Just the last day and even the morning of the show, decided to take some Lasix. I can be drier. It's like, no, you look fine. Flat, lost his vascular. Cause, you know, he peed away a lot of his blood volume,
right?
Plasma volume. And he just deflated. I'm like, oh, bro. You know, like, so put down the bottle.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, so that's a rambling answer for this, but amazing stuff that guy is on a pro stage. Oh, my, I'm looking at the pictures of him. The pictures that I'm looking at, he looks very lean and hard, but he could be a little drier, to be honest. But that's nitpicking then at the pro level. And I was I was never at that level. So there you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's totally different. I've helped people like on the strength sports side of things when we're loading. It's like, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Like, give me everything you can. I want to be as bloated as I fucking can be.
Yep.
You
know?
That's funny.
And that was our whole point. You know, I would go hit weigh-ins and like just go destroy all of it. You know, give me everything plus some and just be miserable the night before, and especially with those 24-hour weigh-ins. And you'd come in, like I'd have huge body swings. I remember my biggest one was I cut down to make 242. And I was like 269 the next day or something.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And it was like, so the swing I did in weight, because I went from, I was heavier than, like, I was 265 or something, cut down to 242. And then the next day I was 269. And so that body weight swing was just gigantic. And that was the last time I did it. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, not to rip on you or powerlifters in general, I've seen bodybuilders do that, and their fluid swings were so bad, like after the event, they were cyanotic, they were like blue, they were clearly in system, some kind of system failure. I'm like, dude, please go to the doctor now.
Well, and that was when I was younger, and then I remember it was my 40th birthday, because I cut down my body weight for my 40th birthday. I was like, well, maybe I'll do a 220 powerlifting meet, and I just did a test run of cutting for it. And I was only like cutting 15 pounds, but I was like, I'm going to die. I'm 40 now. I could hear my own heartbeat. I was like, yep, done. not doing this.
Hey,
that's a young man's game.
That's right. Good point. This young man's dad is not a spring chicken anymore.
Yeah. So you just got to be careful. So, especially with the cutting and the diuretics and things like that. But, who was the study you mentioned, Mike, that just came out? So he can potentially look that up. Guillermo?
I thought it was Dr. Guillermo had one. It might be a little while ago. I'll try to poke around and see if I could find it. I thought they put together like something like physique best practices.
Oh, I reviewed that paper. That. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, it was a while ago. So.
Yeah, that's right. That would be a good one, because he is both an experienced bodybuilder, Guillermo Escalante, and a PhD scientist, right? Or a doctoral level scientist.
And if I remember it, I have it on my list to read in detail. I perused over it when I was looking up some stuff for this last prep. And if I remember right, correct me if I'm wrong, Lonnie, they went through like kind of all the aspects of peak week and carb loading and what the research says. And it was really, really well done.
That's a good call, because there should be some practical stuff in there. And we all know bodybuilders will go read PubMed stuff.
And it's open access.
Right. Open access. So
I'll give one tip to everybody. If you're of the aging population and you're struggling to lose those pesky few pounds, my wife just recently joined the Postal Service as a job. and she's walking an average of 15 miles a day, and the body fat is falling off of her. So if you need to lose weight, just walk 15 miles a day, 6 days a week, and it'll do it. Like
You know,
I
the tough thing is she's getting paid though. If you're
yeah. Oh,
that slow tortoise approach, that's you're talking about huge multi-hour blocks out of every
yeah.
day. So
Well,
yeah.
when she joined, they have mounted routes and then walking routes. Mounted routes are the people that just go, they never get out of the car, and she's like, I want to walk.
Oof, yeah.
And it's just like, I don't want to sit down all day. And it's just like, I've told her, I was like, you're going to lose weight fast.
Yeah.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I was like, we're going to be upping your carb intake, everything intake in general. And we've reached that point a month in. And it was like, you need to get, so we bought her a big thing of mass gainer. And it's like,
That's
so she
funny.
can just drink it while she's dressed. She's like, I
Just to
don't have
maintain.
time to eat, you know? And it's just, it's falling off. So there you go. It's just
Yeah.
low impact walking.
That's right. More evidence for the
So,
power of just walking.
yep.
Lots of walking. If
So,
your
and
feet
now
can handle it.
the only issue we're running into now is like, when do I train and when do I have energy to train? So
Oh,
she's only getting like 1 to 2 days a week. I was like, that's okay, you know, for now until you're used to it, because they're coming into busy season too.
yeah.
So it's going to get real crazy with the holidays.
Oh, yeah.
So, but
Yeah.
there you go. Just go walk. And that's what I tell people. Like when I lost all my weight initially, I was working construction. So I was doing like
Oh, yeah.
12-hour days of cardio.
Neat.
You know,
Yeah. Yeah, it's still cardio.
and it just fell off me, and everybody thought I was on meth. I was like, no, I swear I'm not. So,
Yeah.
all
I
right.
just submitted a book proposal myself and my buddies, Dean and Jeb, on basically a high flux rate of basically people can't white knuckle their way down to super low calories. Well, now they can with GLP-1s, but if they're opting not to use them, that trying to exist at 1200 calories in and out is just a horrible way to live your life.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, you should train, you should do cardio, but you should probably walk a lot more. And
Yeah.
walking is the easiest way to bump up your overall energy output. And
Yeah.
everybody can do it. You have access, don't have limitations, don't need equipment, don't need warm-ups.
Yep.
And we actually has there's a study I think on male workers in the UK. If I remember right, we looked at some of the old assembly workers, the Amish population, some research from Bengali, India, and just all these different studies showing that, shocker, if you move more and you move enough, you lose weight.
Yeah. Yep. People just poo-poo walking too much, and it's such a, like, everybody should do it. Like you said, the whole population should do it more. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think like if caffeine gives you like a 10% boost on metabolism, walking will take you from one met to two or three mets easily,
Oh,
right?
yeah,
It's not
easily.
intense, but you're talking about multiples of resting metabolism. Like
Yeah.
that's a big impact. So, yeah, worth considering.
Definitely.
All
Awesome.
right. All right. Well, let's
Okay,
see.
guys, have a good one.
See ya.
The Iron Radio podcast and all of the audio on ironradio.org is for informational purposes only. If you're interested in starting a diet or exercise program, it's important to check with your physician. Also, seek the help of registered dietitians, athletic trainers, and qualified exercise physiologists in order to make the progress that you need.